You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television and Tyler Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand, and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Alice wants what you think I've seen. Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side with me, and we're talking moccasin joke. Where the party go hell? I've been to St. John's Wall. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Star.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And, folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
I'm well, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine.
That's good, buddy. You know, it's the last couple of weeks, I've got to tell you, I've been inundated. And when I mean inundated, Bill, and ladies and gentlemen around the globe, between these crazy accusations that's being made about a Bigfoot body, that our guy that has hoaxed all of us in the past, and I said I wasn't going to talk about it anymore. But my God, I got so many emails. I got so many phone calls. And it just hasn't stopped. And they're saying, Tom, is there any truth in this matter? Well, I just want to let everybody know this. I've been super, super busy. We have new projects that are working. We have guests that have flown out to see us. But I thought it was important enough, Bill, like I told you, to let our fans, our listeners for in excess of 7 years now, know what's going on. Ladies and gentlemen, I can only tell you this. We were duped. It cost us a lot of money. We've licked our wounds and we've gone on. That same person came back out last year in December or November, October, or whenever the hell it was, and said that he had another body. I looked at those photos. Now, apparently, they've got another body, and I put those pictures side by side, and it nowhere near looks like that body. But now they're saying they had an autopsy, and the DNA came back, and they're going to tour this body around the world. Ladies and gentlemen, unless you see this body, unless you get total verification from somebody, i.e., the medical institution, the scientific institution, a real credited DNA institution that stays in front of you, and you look at them and the body and say, hey, it's the real deal, don't believe it. Don't believe it. He's taken us for a lot of money. I hear that he's taken a lot of other people, these different levels, to be a member of his website, and whether it's a gold or a silver or a platinum. And I've been hearing all kinds of rumors. It's hearsay. I don't know. And I don't care. That's their business. All I'm telling you, for a man that's been in this world for as long as I have, I'm telling you that I don't believe that it's real. Okay? And then those of you that come back and said to me, oh, well, Tom, you were out there telling everybody, well, you touched it. You felt it. It was real. The body, and I'm going to tell it one more time, the body parts that I felt and I touched, i.e., the eyeballs, the tongue, the intestines, yes, they were real. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a veterinarian. I'm not a medical doctor. I didn't know that these people were macabre enough to put body parts of all these other dead animals in that suit, strategically placed. You don't know the circumstances unless you walk in that person's shoes, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to tell you for the last time, unless the body is in front of you with someone from the scientific world, medical field, or a DNA person that's reliable and trusted, and they tell you personally that this is the real deal, don't believe it. Go on with your lives, folks. We have. We're tired of the nonsense. We're tired of the bullshit. So please, save yourself a lot of heartache. Save yourself a lot of time and effort. Save yourself a lot of grief. And by God, save us a lot of grief and a lot of wear and tear. We are through with this guy. We've gone on with our life. If he ever came up with a real Bigfoot, I'd be the first one to come back out and say, God bless you, it's real. I know it's all bullshit. We were taken for a lot of money, ladies and gentlemen. And those said, oh, Viscardi's behind all this. Viscardi's behind bullshit. That's not true at all. Okay? And those who said that don't even know me.
Well, Tom, the thing that people don't recognize is this. 80% of the people that are slamming have never met you, have never even talked to you. And they talk with authority like they were conversing with you and they know everything that's went on. And that's not true. We found out many times that some of the people that are, you know, putting stuff out, erroneous stuff out, have never even met you, and yet they're, you know, slamming the, you know, saying, well, this is a fraud because we know it was because we proved it. Well, how could they prove it? They were never there. They never had anything to do with it. I mean, it's just so ludicrous. I mean, these people are so crooked, or were so crooked. I ran them around for 3 hours. And with the money we gave them, they went out and bought a brand new computer.
Go ahead. Tell the people the truth.
I mean, we went around, and the first thing that they wanted to do, you know, first of all, you got to understand where we come from. First of all, we did not even want to come up with a news conference on the 15th of August in 2008. That was too soon. All of the work, all of the things that we had in encompassing to prove the validity of DNA and a bunch of other things wasn't supposed to be done until September, okay? And what we're talking about is we're not just talking about a single DNA thing. What we're talking about is a full DNA analysis, and it was going to take 3 weeks to a month to do. But what happened was these individuals called us 2 days before on the, I think it was the 12th, 11th or 12th, wasn't it? The
12th. Yes, it was.
And they said, look, here's what we want. And they gave us a list of things that they want. And you know, either meet these or we're just going to, you know, take off. So what they wanted was they wanted to have a conference on the 15th, on a Friday. And I don't know if anybody's ever set up a conference, but there's like something like about 300 news media people in a great big, in a hotel room that was pretty good size. It was at Palo Alto, wasn't it?
What
was the hotel?
It was the Cabana Hotel.
Yeah, the Cabana Hotel. And, I mean, all kinds of people from all over. I mean, we're not just talking about news media, but we're talking about Bigfoot people that we know. I mean, some were friends, some were ex-arch enemies, and they were there to see the whole charade. And all we could do at the time was put out a certain amount of information. Now, when we the information that we put out was information that we got from what we had at the time was valid sources. But it wasn't complete, and we knew that it wasn't complete. But as you probably understand, these guys got up and started talking about, how they got about getting it, and they were sucking all kinds of media attention. And, you got to understand how big that was. Our website shut down for almost a week. The amount of it was in terabytes was the hits on the website and everything else. This is one of the largest media events in 2008. And,
as a matter of fact, it was, they can Google it because everything is on the internet.
Yeah.
It's the seventh largest story in the world in 2008. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you this. You know, what's on the internet, you can't take an eraser and go and erase it and get rid of it. There's, like Bill said, you know, 5-6 minutes ago, there's people that don't know me come out and talk and bash me. There's haters. These people never even met me.
Well, not only that, Tom had quite a few calls from old arch enemies, people who were, you know, for whatever reason, we don't know. I mean, Tom had never really tried to make any enemy with anybody, but these people were totally against him. And finally they called it and said, hey, let's bury the hatchet, because they wanted to be a part of the media event, right? And Tom didn't, you know, I mean, disallow it. I mean, he didn't say no. But as soon as it turned out to be a negative event, boy, I'm going to tell you, the people that wanted to be close friends and up in the media event to take, hold their hand out for, you know, when things were coming, put a knife in it and started stabbing. And I'll tell you, it was the media, once the media takes away with a story, I don't care if it's true, I don't care if it's whatever, what's counted as truth is whatever the media puts out. And it's not necessarily the truth. I know everybody out there has seen many, many, many other kinds of events that have transpired, very similar in nature, and the media makes it alive. And the media's motivation is totally to make money, to make it the big story. They don't care if it's negative. They don't care who they hurt. They don't care who gets, who gets hurt. I mean, they really don't. I mean, it's really a media frenzy. And very similar to the paparazzi or anything else. I mean, it's just horrible. And these people just take off, and whether the story's true or not true, they'll publish it, and they'll, validate that it's a true story or whatever. They do all this kind of underhanded things. And of course, what was our motivation? Well, our motivation was, prior to this event, we were already on another event where we were trying to track a creature. And we were in the middle of doing that when all this happened. And we had to circumvent that event and put this event in its place. And we did not go seeking. Tom did not go out seeking. Tom was notified by a certain individual, and the individuals that are, the Rick Dyer and his friend, his accomplice, and they wanted him to represent them. And that's what Tom did, but he didn't just do it. He did it under a contract. And that contract was specifically written that if it was a hoax, or if it turned out to be a hoax, there was some retribution to be paid. Okay?
And we had nothing in that contract states that we had nothing to do with that hoax.
That's right.
I'm glad you brought that out, Bill.
Yeah.
I've been doing so much, as you know, for the company right now, and we're in so many transitions going on right now. Sometimes
sure.
I forget, but at the same point in time, here's the big question, ladies and gentlemen. Out of all the people in the world, all these so-called Bigfoot researchers, these so-called Bigfoot hunters, these so-called Bigfoot aficionados, these so-called guys that have these blogs and have these websites, and they're all the gurus, how come they didn't spend their money to go out and find out about these guys? How come these guys asked for me? The reason being was they went to the top, okay? They went to the guy who's in the field, spent the majority of the time out there, okay? And it all happened through that other clown there in New York who introduced us to him. That later on we find out that he's out there enjoying and partaking in our monies, four-wheeling, drinking beer, and laughing with them. But that's okay, too. You know why? What goes around comes around. And I'm not going to mention his name to give him any more publicity. But I want people to understand, please stay away from this thing. And if you have a question, contact him directly. Because I want nothing to do with the clown. It comes out in the wash every time, but there's still people out there because it's apparently no news out there. So they need to put this out there and get everybody stirred up. And, oh, my God, I must have got, I don't know, in the last week alone, I received maybe 75 phone calls and about maybe 600 emails, Bill, on this $10 million bounty on a Bigfoot's head.
Yeah, I know.
This show.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, if you ever watch Survivor, they took off on Survivor on this thing. They put these poor people involved in here that have no clue what they're talking about. One guy says he killed two Bigfoot, but then they go to find out and he was selling the Bigfoot meat as steaks for $10,000 or something. Don't know the guy, don't want to know him, okay? And they eliminate him each week. But here's the thing. They shot 9 episodes, ladies and gentlemen. So therefore, if they shot 9 episodes and it's an elimination period of the teams going out there looking for him, that means they never found it. You already know the ending. Okay? I was asked to be on that show. They wanted us on that show. I want nothing to do with that crap. Okay? All of I'm trying to do one thing, ladies and gentlemen. Me and my guys, we're trying to go out there in an earnest way to prove to the world that there's an unknown primate roaming these mountains, roaming these hills and valleys, and it's out in these remote places. There's something out there. We know it. We've seen it. So please don't waste our time with this nonsense. Furthermore, I got a ton of emails from people I don't even know and said, oh, Tom, is this guy Alex Hearn a member of your team? And if he is, what are you going to do now? Look what happened. Holy shit. This poor guy, Alex, you know, he's gone through, I don't know if he's had a nervous breakdown. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a shrink. But you know, I feel sorry for him. I know he's bad-mouthed me in the past. I've never done nothing wrong for this kid, but help him. And if he wants to know the truth, he'll tell you the truth, ladies and gentlemen. So I get this news release. Bam, it shows his picture. They got an APB after him. He's a hit and run. He fatally hit somebody with his car, and he left the scene of an accident. It's all over the news. Just put his name in there, hit and run Alex Hearn. And everybody's sending me this stuff. What are you going to do? You're still going to have him on your team? He's not a member of my team, ladies and gentlemen. He's been out on a few expeditions with me because of my kindness. But he's never been a member of my team. Okay? He's not a member of our team now. Now, I did call him because I'm a fair guy. And I'm my condolences goes out to the poor guy that was hit and it's dead and to his family. And I told him that. And I said, I'm sorry to hear what happened. And he said, well, I can't talk very good, Tom, but I can just tell you they dismissed the charges. And I said, well, I'm really happy for you. Okay? And then he was telling me about one of the guys on the Indian reservation was in a coma, and that he wanted to call and tell me about it. And that was the last I had to do. So what I'm trying to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, even with him, even though he's bad-mouthed me in the past, okay, I'm still a human being. He's still a human being. He's innocent until found guilty. So give him his chance, okay? I feel sorry for the poor man that's dead and his family. Our condolences from our team go out to that family. When a person's life is taken away prematurely, it's not a good thing. But you know what? I'm sure that the law today is investigating all this, and I'm sure what's going to be done is going to be done right. And I told you I talked to him, and he said he had the charges dismissed. I hope things go well for you, Alex Hearn. I'm not here to badmouth you. Never have. I hope things go well. And we pray for the family. Bill, I don't know if you have anything to say on the closing, but I'm going to have to go on this. But, ladies and gentlemen, just know one thing. Those of you who know me, know my guys, know us. We're out there in earnest to do one thing. We're there to prove to the world that there's an unknown primate. And I really believe if anybody does that, it will be us. So, you know, watch the entertainment that's on TV if you've got nothing to do. I'm sure there's a lot of good stuff out there. But if that pops your cork, go ahead and do what you need to do. God bless you. Gentle Giant, when you get a chance, give me a call. I need to speak with you. Bill, thank you for giving me the opportunity here tonight. I just wanted to set the record straight. Anything you want to add before I go?
Well, yeah, there is. In the last few months there was also a movie that came out, and there was a lot of association with you, one was Rick Dyer, but there were several other people. And this movie was produced by Minnow Productions, and they said some false things. And basically, I mean, we had these people with us for a couple of months to shoot a sequence for reality, and they were supposed to be working on the reality, but what they really did is they took ours and other people's videos that they took, and they put them together into a single movie, and they made it look like everybody was hunky-dory with each other, when none of the people that were involved in it even knew that the other people were in it. So it was kind of a big hoax on their part. And, of course, when things like that happen, a lot of stories go around and things, and that's another thing that happened that was just plain false. Nothing that... We had nothing to do with anything other than our own expedition.
You know, that's the God's honest truth, and I forgot about that. It goes to show you, when it's a negative miss, it goes out of my life and my memory, if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. We don't.
These guys from Minnow Films came out under false pretenses to us and said, hey, we're going to shoot something, we want to do it on the life of a Bigfoot hunter. Never mentioned about these other two Bigfoot teams. And I'm sure he did the same thing about the other two guys. They capitalized on my image and my celebrityism in the industry to sell the movie. And a lot of you people seen all that hoopla, shooting Bigfoot, okay, Minnow Films. And then they pulled it off because of their contractual agreements until this month or next month, and apparently it's going to be the biggest thing since sliced bread. And then, what do you know, all of a sudden, Rick Dyer comes out with another new body. Well, is he a part of this film? Is he making money? Is he taking bank on this film? I have no idea. I know that I was paid X amount of dollars to do it off. They were going to come out in the life of a Bigfoot hunter, okay, which apparently was done on false pretenses. And you're exactly right, Bill, yeah. But you know what? What goes around comes around, and I can't wait for the thing to come down because I'd love to put a cease and desist on their ass under those false pretenses, and I'm sure that the attorneys are just waiting for it to come out, and that's the reason why I don't believe it will be shown here in the United States. It'll be overseas because they know that it's a lot of money to go with their barristers over there, and who's going to win? The attorneys.
Well, that's it, buddy.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, good buddy. I know you got, ladies and gentlemen, you've got Rocky, and he's got the Swede, and he's got
Anthony Richard.
Anthony from back east. A lot of action's been going on. Stay tuned because it's all happening. And hopefully next week I won't be so busy as I am, and we can do a full hour with a lot of news stories. God bless you, Bill. Thank you, everybody around the world. Kudos and salutations. Till next time, America.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, well, what we're going to do, we're going to go on to our next guest, and we're going to talk to Richard from New York. And we're going to see what's going on with him. Richard, how are you tonight?
I'm pretty good, Bill. And I'm glad to see Tom's full of fire. He's a little sound tired, but he's full of fire.
Well, I try to understand that the last month or so, there just been just a horrendous amount of all kinds of stuff. You know, they're not all bad. I mean, some people were just want to honestly know what the answer is because there's so many rumors and stuff going around. And of course, a lot of our family called because they just say, "Hey, is this really true? Or did you? What's going on?" You know, that kind of thing, right?
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
We've not made any announcements about anything. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, to tell you the honest truth, 90% of the time, we never react to any of this garbage, okay? And we've learned a long time ago not to react to it. We just let it go, and whatever they want to say, let them say. We're not going to try to change their mind, and we're not going to give them any leverage to be able to make something out of it. Well, so we just let them, shovel the garbage out. We don't care. We know what we do, and most of the people that know us know what we do. And we don't have to prove ourselves to anybody. So we just keep going with what we're really doing. And that way we don't let this stuff bother us and affect our own research and other things that are going on. Pretty much, that's what we do. But that's tonight we just wanted to kind of clear the air a little bit because of all the questions and stuff. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I was out looking today. I didn't see a damn thing, to be truthful with you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can't go out there every day and see something because that would prove maybe that it isn't real.
You've had some pretty unbelievable pictures and stuff that you've sent here in the last few months.
You know what, Bill?
Yeah.
Let me just say something.
Sure.
I consider myself one of the luckiest people in the world. I've had two sightings. I've actually heard I don't know what you want to call it, talk or chatter.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of pictures. I've had a lot of good experiences. I met Tom Biscardi in person and spent several days with him. That's like a baseball player beating Babe Ruth or Lou Gehrig,
mm-hmm.
as far as I'm concerned. And as far as Tom Biscardi's character, I don't like bullshitters. And Tom Biscardi could stand at my back in a fight, watching my back anytime. Tom Biscardi is a real man and a man of his word. And I don't say that about people too often. The guy's the real deal.
Well, thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome, because it's true. I mean, Tom and I spent a couple days together. We had an argument, but you know what? He put out his hand and shook my hand. Not many people do that, Bill.
No, I understand. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And so I just consider myself a very lucky person in this life. I met you. I've met Steve in person. I met Roger Peterson. I haven't met Swede and Rocky, but I've talked to them. They sound like nice guys. I don't know about the eating the raccoon part, but they sound like good guys.
Hey, you don't know what you're missing.
Really? Did you ever try it?
I know. Yeah.
Not me.
You wouldn't. You know what? If they fixed it right, you would never know.
I ate venison and I didn't like it. And I
you
tried
didn't like
that.
Yeah, how was it prepared, man? I'm going to tell you, venison
is
good.
We used to go to a dinner and they'd prepare peppers and spaghetti. No.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, it's not enough fat in it. It's not like steak.
Oh, my God. I mean, steak? Venison steaks? My God. Oh, man, it's good.
We got more deer in New York State now than when the pilgrims came to America.
But Richard, here's some of the things a lot of people don't know or realize. You know, any kind of an animal that's a game kind of an animal has a game taste.
You're right.
Ducks, pheasant, fowl, all animals. And there's only the way that they have to prepare the meat for cooking so that you get rid of the game taste. You normally as well soak it in salt water and for about 3 or 4 hours and let it take that gamey taste out. And excuse me, but I mean and also when you're cooking you cook it, there's certain other things that you can cook with it that really enhance the flavor. I mean, pheasant, my God, wild rice. I don't know if you've ever tasted wild rice, but
no.
I mean, wild rice and pheasant or duck. My God, it's so good.
I see pheasant all the time. I haven't seen a pheasant, and I live in not a rural area.
Mm-hmm.
But I see geese and I see deer. We had a bear
sure.
kill within a mile of my house.
Sure.
And I haven't seen a pheasant in years, Bill. Not
oh, really?
In a year.
Well, they got other things, like partridges and even
sure
little doves.
Someplace.
Even the doves. I mean, all those. But I mean, there's ways that you have to prepare those things.
Mm-hmm.
So, because if you just prepare them, just plain out of the thing. Now, when you're out in the wild, like Rocky and Swede do, obviously, there's no way to do that. But, I mean, you got to understand, protein is protein. And when you cook a fish or you cook a rabbit or a squirrel or a raccoon or whatever, there's a lot of good food there.
Yeah, well, you could take Rocky and Swede and Steve and drop them in the middle of the woods, and they'd come out weighing 20 pounds more. I'd starve to death. That's the truth.
Well, one of the things they're going to talk about tonight is going to be about food and how they, because the whole thing about in the woods is, and you got to understand, you got to understand, The whole thing about the woods thing is survival, and it's the weather, it's the terrain. Each terrain has a completely different set of skills that you have to use in order to survive in it. And in some terrains, water is plentiful, but food isn't. And you got to know what kind of foods are available to you, what kind of plants are available to you, and I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that this thing tastes like a smorgasbord, green beans and corn and carrots and that kind of thing. Nope. It's not like that. It's what it is. It's nourishment so that your body can continue to go on.
It's survival.
Yeah. And you can continue to go out and research or hunt or whatever you're doing. And, there's a lot to that. And Rocky and Swede, I think, in my estimation, are experts. They know exactly what to do. They know where to go. They know what to do. I mean, and they know exactly what, through time, many, many years they've had together. And, they're a team that is probably very few people could match.
Oh, no, they're friends, too. That makes a big difference.
Yeah.
That makes
big. But it's okay, and not everybody can be like that. What people have to do is just like going outside in the snow this winter when the cold spell came.
Mm-hmm.
Over here in California, up in the mountains, it froze. And guess what? The highway froze. And guess what? They had about 10 or 15 or 16 miles of traffic. Now, every single one of those people that were in those cars, guess what they were doing? They didn't put on any kind of a big old jacket because down below the mountains, it's 80 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going up there with all their little T-shirts and tank tops and all that stuff, and now they're inside of a metal car that's freezing. You see what I'm saying? And so they had to send a lot of rescue operations to keep people from being harmed, frozen and killed from that. But those are simple things that everybody can do in order to ensure survivability in different situations,
Well,
now, when you go up and when you're going to your little place up there, where you go,
mm-hmm.
have you ever put yourself in the position of what happens if I couldn't find my way out?
I know the place so well,
yeah.
But I can walk out from any place there. It's only 5,000 acres, Bill.
Oh, okay.
It's only 5,000 acres.
Well, let me tell you something. I've seen two deer hunters in a small swamp, and I was sitting on a knoll, and I was watching them, and it was heavily brushed with swamp grass and brush and stuff, and they were walking, and guess what they were doing? People have a tendency to move to their left, and in a circle. When you're walking.
Oh, they're walking in circles.
And they dodge the trees and things. And they were going in a complete circle.
I watched
them go in a complete circle three times. And then finally, I was afraid to holler out because I was afraid I might get shot. Because, you know, people are very excited. But they shot their gun three times. So then I shot my gun three times. And acknowledged it, and then they looked up and said, "Oh my God!" And they come running out. Now, I had them in view for a good 2 hours.
And
all they were doing was walking around a circle, and they didn't realize they were walking in a circle.
Bill,
and the road was only less than a half a block away from them.
Yeah. Bill, we have the Adirondack Park here.
Yeah.
We have a road that goes from. Where I live in Gilliland, it starts and it goes right to Montreal. And they had to put these cell towers in the Adirondacks that look like trees. They wouldn't let them put cell towers, and they call them Franken trees. They're not trees, but they're not cell towers. Because people were breaking down in the middle of winter and freezing to death. It's pretty... The Adirondack Park is bigger than all those federal parks, Yellowstone and all of them put together. That's how much territory there is out there.
Well,
I guess
we're running a little bit late here.
I'm sorry.
Thank you for calling. You're going to stay on, right?
Oh, absolutely, Bill.
Okay.
I'm sorry I didn't have more to add tonight. But
No, don't worry. It's okay. It's fine. I'm going to keep in touch with you.
Okay, Bill.
I'm going to just mute you out right now. We'll go and we'll go talk with Anthony. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Richard from New York. And next, we're going to go out to Anthony from Virginia. Anthony, how are you tonight?
All right. I hope everybody's doing well.
Yeah. I think we're doing okay. So tell us a little bit about what's going on in your world.
Okay. Well, sorry I wasn't able to email you those pictures.
That's okay. Don't worry. We'll get them.
Okay. I tried to send them a text message, but I don't know if you received it or not. But in any case, one of the pictures that I had shown was by a substation, and there was nothing spectacular there, but it was just, you know, as a matter of comparison, you know, there was a tree that had fallen and had leaned over another tree. But, I mean, obviously the tree that had fallen was much bigger, and when it knocked down the other tree, I mean, you know, it created an arch. But, you know, again, this is just if a tree falls on another tree and bends it, I mean, you know, it's got to be a massive tree, and, you know, obviously the force right there is going to bend the tree. And so I was just taking the picture of what happens naturally, you know, in this particular situation. But the other picture that I showed you was from a new substation, which has a new pole installed with new guy wires, and then you see a tree that's arched, and it's arched towards the three guy wires there, you know, for that solid pole that's standing up. It's not a wooden pole. It's a metal pole just going straight up, and you got those three guy wires there, and you know, number one, it's brand new. A tree could not have fallen on it, you know, because if it did, it would have knocked down the guy wires, but evidently they're all still in place.
Sure.
Again, this is at a new location. This is a new formation. I've been there many times. And so, we're seeing what we see in other locations, but, you know, we don't, you know, but again, with enough visits to the area, hopefully we'll get another sighting over there.
Well, have you, now, you know, what do you theorize? these creatures obviously do crawl in trees, climb trees. And I would imagine we know they push them over.
Oh, yeah.
We know they shake them. We've had several reports on visual encounters where they've shaken the trees and scared the heck out of the people. We know that they, by your friend, they were climbing and jumping around in the trees.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've had several other reports from other people, Colorado, Montana, and some other places, where they were jumping around and actually throwing stuff from the trees. I don't know what it was, pine cones or what, but they were, you know, or acorns or whatever the heck they were throwing. I don't know. But they were throwing things from the tree. And
I'm sorry.
I would assume that we have a couple of videos of them climbing trees, and that while actually one is in the tree, the other one climbs the tree and they shake the tree. You know, I'm assuming that these creatures can, you know, bend the trees over to their, you know, whatever they, you know, want, and that that's a lot of the, some of the formations and things that we get. They pushed the trees over. You've had instances where they actually buried the tip of the tree in the ground, about, what, 2 feet? 2 feet into the ground?
And it wasn't even a, you know, they definitely forced it in there somehow because...
Right, like, I mean, they just like they stuck it in the ground upside down.
Yeah, I mean, there was no root system, so you know they didn't grow there.
And we know that they use these, they've used trees to... To do wood knocking, that's a pretty big knock using a log.
Oh, yeah.
But
there was an occasion when I was with East Coast Jack, and when we were out in the woods by his area, you know, and I think, again, you know, I probably ruined that particular area by turning on my light, but what made me turn it on was that, you know, I mean, there was a lot of, I suspect that there was something in the trees shaking the trees, you
sure.
know, and because all of a sudden all the leaves were making all these sounds, you know, and mm-hmm. you know, and whatever was, you know, in the trees, they were falling to the ground, and I was like, what's that, you know, and I'm like, I said that was a strange wind, and you know, but he's telling me there's no wind, you know, and,
right,
so yeah.
Well, you remember that about 4 months ago? Actually, I had three different encounters with younger kids. These kids were about 17, 18, 16, 17, 18, three of them. And they were from Maryland. And they were out. And, of course, you know, that's the one I showed you, or I played the, you know, I played back the where they were making the report on my, you know, voicemail.
Uh-huh.
And basically the one kid seen the creature had a tree that was beating the other tree. And I mean, beating it pretty hard. And it's, of course, that's enough to scare the heck out of you. See something big enough to swing another tree and hit it, you know, a log and hit the tree with it.
Quite a knock.
He was pretty shaken up. And then there was a couple other kids, groups of kids, in the same, in Maryland, as a matter of fact. That was Austin. I had two Austins.
I remember that.
From Maryland. And each one, they live close to each other. And again, one of them, of course, they had the tree knocking thing. The tree, you know, with a log type of thing. So, I mean, these are encounters where people have seen them swinging a log or something to hit a tree. And I'm not sure, you know, that you read a lot about wood knocking and tree knocking and all this other stuff, but very few times do you ever have encounters where people report that they saw it doing it. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
We had a guy from that it was in his military doing his navigation exercise in the Army, and if you remember correctly, and the creature was shaking the tree. And he heard all that noise, because there's no wind. It was hotter than heck out there in the woods. And here it was, this creature shaking that tree. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things where people have reported this kind of activity. And what's interesting to me is to try to find the result. You know, what different kind, because we see all kinds of tree formations, rock formations. I mean, so many different things. And it's just amazing to me. I mean, it, you know, I mean, that these things take place. We don't ask a lot of questions about it a lot of times, because everybody's interested in just what did the creature look like, you know, how big is it, and all this. But those other factors, many, you know, the small little factors of, you know, seeing the creature do other kinds of things. And as you know, I mean, we know chimpanzees use sticks and tools and stuff to take honey and, you know, beat holes in the trees for honey and all kinds of stuff. I mean, you know what I mean? There's a lot of different, and that's a chimpanzee. I mean, but this is a big creature. So, I mean, I would not put it past them not to be able to do the same kinds of things with these tree formations, making different designs and things, maybe signs. We don't know, and that's what we're trying to find out. What do you think?
Well, I will tell you, I'm wish I could, you know, getting one picture, one video, it's probably not going to be convincing enough for a lot of folks, especially when you had a bonehead that's got a body, I don't got a body, oh, I got it again. I think what would help is that, you know, if there was an area where they are, where we can watch them in their habitat, where they're gathering food, you know, something. If there was a way to track them without interfering with them, without scaring them, without something, and again, just having it like, you know, it's kind of like going in the woods. You know, you can identify the squirrel's nest, you can identify the bird's nest. You know what I mean? You could identify the foxhole. You know what I mean? And you know, you could set things up and you can, you know, catch them going in, going out. I just wish we could, you know, see something, you know, habitually, you know, so that, without a doubt, you know, we have enough visual evidence and probably, you know, hopefully vocal evidence to say, hey, you know, these are the creatures, you know. I know a lot of them, if someone has a 1-2 second, 10 second, you know, or you know, or much longer sighting, it's going to change that person's life. But you know, I'm just, you know, with the technology that's available in everybody's pocket, hopefully we'll be able to catch, you know, more convincing evidence. You know, I know, and a lot of your listeners and your guests are, there's no need to convince them, you know, well, where I'm at, I see something real. Where they're at, they see something real. You know, it's just, you know, these buggers are so quick, you know, a lot of game cameras are just not quick enough on the trigger to catch them, you know. Definitely, and even though the game camera is probably much faster than my hand reaching for a camera or a camcorder, I'm just hoping one day soon that, we'll all be able to show the world ourselves, you know. And
well, we have many pictures. I mean, just in the last 2 months, I've gotten pictures from one of the teen gangs there. They took a picture and had a picture of one of these creatures. And, I mean, it is really absolutely phenomenal.
There's none of that. But again, you know, to get to somebody that, by using somebody else's expression that, you know, they grew up on the concrete, you know, they're going to say, hey, that's a man in a monkey suit, you know.
Well, no, this isn't a man in a monkey suit. You can tell that. I mean, this is a pretty wild. This is a pretty wild picture. This isn't one of those that it could be a ghillie suit or something like that. This is pretty, pretty telling. And the thing is the issue would be somebody calling it a. It's not an ape because it has not It doesn't have the forehead or the nose or the features of an ape or a chimp. So it's a bipedal creature, and it has long hair on it. I mean, it's pretty neat. I mean, there's a lot of pictures. But the problem is pictures, even DNA, one DNA sample, does not solve the problem in the scientific aspect of things. They need many samples. And, you know, to satisfy science in their quest for what a new species is, or, and if the other thing is, well, we already know that they're not all the same species. We know they're different just because of their DNA. Their DNA is different. And so, you know, what makes them different, although they're similar, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kinds of things. And so there's many, many questions that have to be answered. And we have the technology to do a lot of this stuff. And so it's, you know, I don't know. It's a... We just hang in there and keep going, and eventually we'll make it, I'm pretty sure.
I believe it. I believe it. I know that these buggers possess superhuman strength, so, you know, to you know, I don't think it's going to be like gorillas where you can create their natural habitat. I mean, it's quick.
Yeah, well, their natural habitat is where they're at. And some of them migrate, and some of them stay around.
I'm just saying, to have one in captivity, I don't think that would, you know, you'd probably have to put, you know.
well, we don't even know. I mean, if it was a human, if it's human, which some of our DNA would say that some of these creatures are, ancient human, if it's human, then, you know, I mean, it's like finding a new tribe of human people. Like they did in the Philippines, okay? And, you know, the tribe of people that were way back in the jungles, and they worshipped the little old World War II airplane. That was their god. They were waiting for it to come back. Have you ever seen that?
I haven't seen it, but
yeah.
Good to know that there's a... these are humans that people can communicate with, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of things going on out there, and we don't know everything. So there's a lot of stuff to still be sorted out. Well, gosh, thanks for coming on, and we're going to end here, we're going to have our little question thing or open it up. I'm going to go up to Rocky and Swede right now, and thanks, Anthony, for coming on.
Sure, thanks for having me.
I want to meet you out just temporarily until we go to Rocky and Sweet here, okay?
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Anthony from Virginia. Now we're going to Rocky and Sweet. Rocky and Sweet, how are you?
I'm doing great, Marco. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good.
You're sounding real
good. I'm doing good. I just wanted to say that, you know, I'm the kind of guy that'd pay a dollar to watch a monkey shit. But I wouldn't give a dime to say anything that Rick Dyer has to offer. That being said, Richard, talking about the food out in the woods, I keep going back to the cattail thing. I guess it was about last year, me and the Swede was out, and I was stomping around in the edge of the pond, the lake, getting cattails. Well, if you find the newer shoots coming up, that's good eating. Some of them that are more mature, if you look up at the top, there's a kind of a flower and spike. If you peel that back, you'll find what looks like a little ear of corn. But you can gather a whole bunch of those up, and good eating. Well, while I was doing that, the bullfrog king Robert Sweet was out there. He cut. I was scaring bullfrogs out of the cattails, and the Swede. I call him the Bullfrog King because I said something about too bad we didn't have a frog gig. And anyhow, he walked over there with his pocket knife and he cut part of the tail of my red flannel shirt off. Go ahead, Swede. Tell him what you did.
Well, my grandfather taught me this trick years ago when I was just a young man. From a young pup, basically. But anyway, I had got into the... See, these bullfrogs were everywhere. A bunch of them. Big ones. You couldn't get close enough to catch them. Didn't have a gig or stick or nothing, you know, to really rig something up right quick. So I had the... got the piece of flannel off Rocky's shirt. Least he could do is give up a piece of that shirt. And I gathered up a pretty long stick there that was laying around over there on the side, and I got in our little survival kit there and got me about a 3-foot piece of fishing line, and I put a little treble hook, little small treble hook on there, and I put that piece of flannel on there. And if you ease around the bank on the other side over there where Rocky hadn't stirred around too much, and most of the frogs went over there, and my grandfather taught me this trick years ago. You take that red flannel and hang that little piece of red flannel out. You look and see the frog sitting there, and then just stick that little piece of flannel out there in front of him, and he will grab a hold of it immediately. And you got him. He can't get away. You don't tear him up, and you got him. He just bites onto it, and he's hooked. Well, I was gathering him up and putting him in my number 10 can. Tom Rocky got done with his thing. I come around there, and I told him, I said, well, these will be real good with that corn on the cob from them cattails, and I had my little can full of packed over full with bullfrogs, and we've used that many times before. Rocky thinks I'm the bullfrog king, but that was just a quick little trick to use it without having to do a bunch of slinging and sticking and not have to do it in the dark. It works real good in the daylight. Catch bullfrogs in the daylight with that trick. It works real well. And anybody that, you know, I mean, we like frog legs and the rest of the frog, too. So we ate frog legs and what we picked off the rest of them, we put them all in Rocky's can there with that corn while we was cooking, made us little corn on the cob from the cattails frog stew. So we had us quite a
feast. Threw in some wild onions.
Mm-hmm.
Threw in some dandelions, threw in some wild asparagus. That's something that you need to keep an eye out for. Wild asparagus grows everywhere in the United States along about any dirt road. We knew that, so we went out about 2 weeks ahead of time and kind of cut the top of them off, and that gave them time to grow a new top, and it was just a tender. Anyhow, when we go out there, we don't just eat to survive. We have some damn fine meals out there.
I know Richard didn't like the he don't know about the coon thing, but Richard, I'll tell you, we'll pass up a whole lot of everything else to get a coon. Coon's good eating. It's got good meat. It's got good texture. And if you just go slow with it while you're cooking it, you can cook it up in a stew style or chili style, or you can put it in a fire pit and do it like a whole hog if you want to. And it's all about going slow with it. But it's got a great, I don't know if it's just something about the Arkansas coons and maybe the diet they eat, but we've never had a bad one. Have you, Rocky?
If there's ever been a bad coon out there, I never bit into it.
No.
I think a lot of it is, you know, with the venison, when you don't ever taste a steak until you're 15, 16 years old other than venison. First time I ate a steak, first time I ate beef, I just could not imagine how people could eat anything so foul. Well, you know, my wife kind of tamed me a little bit, and I do, I eat it on occasion, but only on occasion. We keep our freezer full, and we eat venison every night. Ain't nothing better than venison spaghetti or venison meatloaf or venison lasagna. My wife, she draws a line at coon. There's a lot of the wild stuff that she won't eat, but there ain't nothing wild that I won't eat unless it's a red or a yellow bug.
Or armadillo. Although it can be eaten, but we don't do it.
Yeah, they carry leprosy, and well, so I'm not an armadillo eater.
I usually have a cut or a neck or something, and I just don't want to take a chance. There's too many coons and squirrels and stuff like that to eat to not have to. I'm not saying I wouldn't, but it would be definitely gloved up or something. It'd be a well-cooked situation for sure.
Well, you know, me and the Swede has, we've been out there, and just about everything you can imagine, if we see it, like I say, we stay away from the red and yellow bugs because they can be kind of toxic, and I won't pick a mushroom and eat it myself. If the Swede picks them, I'm okay with them, but I just don't pick mushrooms myself. But, you know, there's a lot of things that walk, fly, crawl, all that most people wouldn't even consider eating. Well, you know, everything that we've seen about, we've considered eating, and we've gathered it up and at least tasted it. And, you know, there's been times that we've, you know, broke apart bear turds to see what kind of seeds it had in it, and then we'd backtrack it to wherever those seeds come from, and we usually found some pretty good eating. And it's all a matter of just getting used to eating something like that. But out there where we're at, we found wild strawberries are starting to green up now. When they start bearing, sweetest strawberries you'll ever eat is wild strawberries growing out there on the hillside. Like I say, the wild asparagus. There's just anytime
blueberries, blueberries.
Oh yeah, all kinds of berries, all kinds of fruit. One thing that we learned is when you go out and live off the land in your first aid kit, be sure that you have some kind of diarrhea medicine, because there's some people like me that eat way too many pawpaws. And anyhow, they kind of, well, I fertilize about half the country out there. But anyhow, it's we've done it long enough that we, in most cases, what we eat out there is better than what we pick up at the, you know, at most restaurants. But it's just a matter of taste.
You know,
it's
going to make a comment too. Richard had said, you know, he had made the comment that you know, me and Rocky have spent quite a bit of time together in the woods and doing stuff and as friends, and he has hit that on the head. I'd do just about anything, whatever happened. You know, I got Rocky's back, and it's the same way. So, you know, we jive. We know what we're doing when we're out there, and that's a good thing, because we can key off of each other's stuff, and if there's something going on, we kind of both kind of get on it, and we've both got our own skills for different stuff, and it's kind of nice to have somebody you can count on, because, you know, something could happen to you, and you don't have anybody to count on, and you can count on yourself, but if you can't do anything, it's nice to have somebody else to help you out. And
the only problem with having a good friend along is if things really get bad, you may have to kill him and eat him.
That's true.
But, you know, you can always take a third party.
Right, that's right.
Hey, let's open it up for everybody. How about that?
Okay.
For a discussion. We'll get people
you guys
to ask some
slay
questions.
Me. You two
Anthony
guys
Anthony and Richard,
me.
You're both on.
Yeah. You slay me, you two guys. My Lord. You know, it's not like I've never been in the woods before.
Oh,
I know
understand.
To follow water. I know how to follow water back to civilization, but you know what? I'm not eating what you guys just talked about. I'll starve to death.
Well, Richard, I'm telling you, it's all in the preparation.
You know what? I spent a week in France and a week in Armenia, and I wouldn't even eat their food, much less what you guys were talking about.
Well, Richard, I hope you enjoyed. I mean, if it was something that you know that was in an emergency situation, or maybe some young person that you meet that would like to get into the Bigfoot field, you know, a little bit of knowledge goes a long ways, and it could be beneficial at some point in time.
Yeah, see, I agree.
See, you guys.
Well,
you
actually,
guys,
actually, you know, all you guys with computers, you know. Me and the Swede, we go out there and, you know, we see what we see. But, you know, we know what not to eat, too.
Hmm. And there's a lot of that, before, too.
How about moose? Yeah, you guys ever eat moose? You got moose down there?
No, I wish
we
did.
We don't get any moose in Arkansas, but I'd eat it.
My area, about a month ago, within a quarter of a mile where I go to my work, they had to dart a moose and take it out of there. We get moose through here.
Boy, moose is great eating. From what I understand, I have kin folks in the Northeast, and they tell me all the time about it. I wish we did have them here.
They were going to introduce elk here.
While we're talking about eating stuff out there, you know, here where we live, we've got a lot of wild hogs.
Yeah,
and so anything that we gather. Anytime we get dip water out of the creek, anything, if there's any kind of a sign that the hog's ever been there, we boil our water, then we will strain our water, and then we'll boil our water some more. Everything that we eat, we cook. All the meat that we keep, that we eat, because there's hogs in there, we cook it until it's well done, and then we cook it a little bit more.
Aren't you guys getting overrun with them?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're
yeah.
probably good squatch food, I imagine, right?
I would imagine
well,
that they are.
I mean, there ain't nothing better than killing a little old spotted hog and cooking it, but another one
but
of those
they,
things.
But they contaminate so much is what the problem is, Richard. They're just, you know, they'll go to the water hole and they'll crap in it, you know.
Uh-huh.
They'll go to the, you know, they'll go to a food source like even the pawpaw patch, you know. You know, it used to be where you could go to the pawpaw patch and you could pick pawpaws off the ground and eat them right there.
Uh-huh.
I'd never do that now, ever.
No.
We got to go clean them. If we don't pick them off the tree above the ground, they get a major washing. I mean, you know, with the, you know, because you can get stuff from a hog that, it's not real pleasant. You know, they don't get vaccinations, and they carry everything in the world, and you could get really, really, really bad off.
How about you guys have cougars in Arkansas?
We have bobcats, and, you know, we have rumors of cougars from time to time. Well, panthers, they're called panthers around here, and we have some. If there's going to be any, they'll be further south than us.
Mm-hmm.
We were actually, there was reports of the wolf, the gray wolf coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And there was a couple of road kills up in the Adirondacks, and their DNA said they were wolves.
Yeah.
They come down from Canada. They're working their way back.
You know, Richard, the Adirondacks, up there where you are, my father was raised in Pennsylvania, and he used to tell me about on him and his father would go to upstate New York to hunt, and he said it was just miles and miles of supreme wilderness.
You think people think of New York, they think of New York City?
No, Dad.
No, once you get past Saratoga, it's country. I mean, it's like being in Canada.
It's exactly what Dad said. He said it's just there's no break from upstate New York to Canada. You just walk across the whole thing and not it's unbroken.
Swede, talking about walking, do you reckon I ought to tell them about the birthday thing?
Well, you might give a little snippet. We won't put it on the air, but all of our buddies could hear about it if they want to. You know, we might as well.
Well, you know, me and the Swede, we go out every August for my birthday. We always go out to the woods, and, well, last time we was out there for a little over a month. And we kind of got a – somebody said that they made a reference to my age. And, I mean, I'll be 62 this next birthday.
Uh-huh.
And so me and the Swede got to talking about it, and there's a place called Calico Rock. It's on the far end of the National Forest, the Ozark National Forest from us. And from Calico Rock to Mountainburg is about 118, 120 miles as a crow flies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've decided that we're going to have our little buddy Mojo Johnson drop us off in Calico Rock. We're going to take a 22. Of course, you know, we're going to take our handguns.
Mm-hmm.
But Swede's going to take his little 22 pistol. We're going to take our number 10 cans and everything that we can fit in them and maybe take a backpack. Well, every time we go out, we always carry each one of us has a can of Spam and some instant oatmeal for just in case, but we're going to take the first aid kit and all that stuff, but we're going to endeavor to walk from Calico Rock to Mountainburg. We ain't crows, so it's the one old boy I was talking to said that he figured it's probably about 180 miles. And
wow.
The plan is at this point that we're going to make the walk
in 30 days.
We're going to try to do it in 30 days through the heart of the National Forest. Try to cut it just as straight across as we can, which, like I say, is about 180 miles.
You and guys will be excellent research territory too.
Yeah, that you guys are something.
Well, then, we're going to walk the walk now, Richard.
Yeah, I'm going to be 67 in my next birthday.
Well.
But you know what? My grandpa was 104. I've got really good muscle tone, and I don't consider myself to be a senior. Don't ever call me a senior citizen because I'll give you a dirty look. You're as old as you feel, and you guys are, I don't want to call you mountain men, but you're individualist, all right? You guys are the real deal. You're not like these other guys I see on TV with the beards, okay?
Well, you know, we talked about
jobs. We have jobs, and we make a living and raise our grandkids and do all that too, but we've got a lot of old wild in us too. We can't shake.
We've talked about it for quite some time, you know, on the show about what we do and all that. And, you know, we was talking about it, and, you know, we don't want there to be any doubt. We don't want people to think we're blowing smoke up their butts.
No, you're not.
And so, you know, we just decided, and, you know, Robert, well, you know, I figured that when I brought it up, you know, this was an idea I had, and when I brought it up, I figured that he was gonna say I was crazy, but you know, just as soon as I said that I wanted to do it, he said, "Okay." I said, "When are we gonna do it?"
Hey,
so,
you know, guys, I got something to ask you.
Okay.
For people that know, last April, as soon as the snow left here, I went into my spot. And I do the same spot, being familiar with the area. And I thought I heard two wood knocks. Okay? But it wasn't like I hear on TV, like with Finding Bigfoot. They were more dull. You know what I'm saying, guys?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it wasn't really a bang, 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 bang. I heard them. But it wasn't like, you know, on, when you hear watch Finding Bigfoot, you know, they echo and they do this. And
oh, yeah, they got the pure seasoned piece of wood, you know, that's kiln-dried, whacking against another piece of kiln-dried wood. You know, it's going to sound like two baseball bats cracking.
Well, you know, that's one of those things. You rear back and hit a pine tree as opposed to a big stout hickory. There's a different noise there. Yeah, I mean, but I've never seen Finding Bigfoot. I've never seen the show.
Well, you know what? You're not wasting an hour of your life every week.
Well,
I do
know,
it I say to myself,
Richard,
I just wasted an hour of my life.
Richard, when we hear our knock, when we heard the knocks out there at our place that we go to, we've heard some tree knocks. We've heard several. And then not any time have any of them sounded the same. They all had a different tone.
I try to knock it, and I can't get good knocks.
They've never sounded like somebody standing out there beating on the side of something with a baseball bat.
No.
And you know what?
No, there's different things that happen. Sometimes they'll hit rocks together.
Yes.
Sometimes they'll take another tree and hit a tree with it, and that's a completely different sound.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah.
It sounded real flat sounded, didn't it, Rob?
Yeah, and if the tree is, like if the tree is dead.
Or wet,
it's going to make that kind of a, you know, so
I was out with my granddaughter before I had my first sighting, and we were looking for footprints, and I heard, in the morning I heard a metallic sound, like two rocks being hit together, but it wasn't rocks. And then when I was out there with Raina in the afternoon, we went back because I thought I saw some Bigfoot poop, and I wanted to scoop it up, put in a baggie. Coming out, we heard the same thing. And there's no rocks in there. Could it be they went into the landfill and found two pieces of metal, one of them, and was hitting it together?
Sure, could it be anything?
Oh. Yeah.
Could it be anything?
Lots of cash is around. I mean, I know it just would make sense to me that some, you know, I mean, it's just like, less like myself. I'm walking down through there and I see a, you know, a shiny rock or something. It might
There's
be
no rocks where I go.
I pick it up.
There's no rocks where I go. There's not. You won't find a rock in that whole place.
But I'm
one of those other things. I mean, whatever. I mean,
through the dump there and see something cool, you know, and say, well, that looks pretty neat.
You know what else? You know what else? Right in my hot spot. You go up about 30 yards, and you're on the other side, you're on the landfill, right? One of them had brought a landfill sign and put it about 15 feet off the trail where, in woods where you and I would have trouble getting to, and just dropped it there. They must have, they were blue and gold, and they must have took a real liking to the color.
Very possible. You know, you hear about all kinds of property damage. I mean, it, you know. Yeah, Richard. I don't know, but I would say that you know that that's a great possibility. I mean, you hear reports of all the time of Bigfoot, you know, leaving gifts or carrying stuff off.
Oh, they weren't leaving me. They tolerate me.
They rip fences down. All kinds of stuff. Guys, I want to thank everybody for coming on tonight and sharing, and sharing with everybody. A part of your lives and part of your experiences. And look forward to seeing everybody next week. I'd like to thank all of our listeners out there for tuning in. And Tom will be, we'll see if he can make it back next week. He was kind of under the weather here today, so he only took half the show. But I want to wish everybody, again, a happy new year and good times during this year. I think a lot of good things are going to happen. Keep Bigfooting and keep the Bigfoot alive. And we'll see everybody next week.
Good night, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night,
everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests. Chapman, the Bigfoot team, for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a goal and a pact that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, facing mysteries, legend, tales, and facts. We're all together.